Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to Royal Grown Radio, Season 2. We are so happy to be here today. We've got some very special guests that have a rich history with Royal Gold, Humboldt County, Northern California in general, and particularly a really rich history with Rick here. I'm Michael Beck. I'm here with Rick Elliott.
Well, what's up?
We got Nat Pennington and Hallie Pennington of Humboldt Seed Company. Thank you for joining us and welcome.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. I think we should point out, too, that it's the father-daughter duo, which is an amazing concept. I think that is something that, as being friends and followers on your social media and see all your success, it's something that makes me very proud to see what you guys have been able to accomplish together as a team. It's pretty beautiful.
Well, I have to say I'm kind of proud of us, too. It's been a lot the last few years, but, you know, like all my life growing up, I always wanted to be able to showcase what he was doing and, you know, showcase these amazing seeds and the flower. I begged him for years to make an Instagram. And, you know, now that we're legal, we get to actually post and we get to share with our communities. And, you know, I'm glad to see that people are really getting to enjoy our genetics all over California and all over the place, really.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it. Proud of you guys.
I love that you both touched on how humble both of your beginnings were, coming up meeting basically around a commune and, you know, toughing it out on trim and bad weed trying to find nugs here in Humboldt. Because a lot of people who weren't familiar with Humboldt at the time pictured it as this mecca where everyone had all the weed they could possibly smoke and it was falling out of their cars as they rolled down the highway. And, you know, coming from the Midwest, that was my perception of Humboldt in the 90s when I was getting Humboldt County weed in Grateful Dead show parking lots. So we all had this grandized dream of what was going on in Humboldt, but it was clearly a lot more rootsy for most people. So it shows me kind of your beginnings of meeting each other and kind of entering the cannabis scene. But what I'm curious about, Nat, is how you shifted from, all right, we're smoking trim, we're trimming weed. What took you down the path past just growing cannabis, which almost everyone in Northern California, especially Humboldt, fell into at some point somehow, but into breeding specifically? Yeah. Can you give us some of the inspiration, either genetic-wise or individuals, that kind of sparked that desire in you?
I think just like learning about self-reliance, too, from living out in the mountains out here and,
definitely,
you know, realizing that you can't always depend on, or you shouldn't really depend on someone else to have your genetics ready for you come spring. You should just go out there and figure out how to take care of yourself and make sure you have them so that you can get your season started right. And of course, back then, as you mentioned before, you know, this was happening sometimes in more, let's just say, like clandestine circumstances, like, you know, with backpacks and shovels and out in the woods in the hills of Humboldt. And so back in those days, you know, I think it was just, you were kind of investing a lot more into it. So it was just all that more important to like kind of have your shit all lined out for yourself in the spring. So long story short, that's why I got into breeding. It wasn't as much because I was like, oh, I'm going to, you know, be a breeder and this is something that's just so interesting. It quickly became that. But initially it was just like, you know, I got to grow weed. This is amazing. I love it. And I would hate to get to, you know, next May and be like, huh, you know, what am I going to grow with this? Or I don't have anything. You know, so I just started making seeds.
It makes sense. You know, I always kind of attributed the passion for that coming from, you know, the work that you were getting involved with fish counts and
right,
and all that stuff, you know, because I remember you you definitely got really, our last few years up there, I remember that was a big part of what you were doing, even when you left the ranch and
yeah,
we're just circling around the outside area. But it makes sense to pull back to like what we were all learning at that time of our life in that area through people like that was sustainability. That was a huge thing for most of us that came from cities around the country where that wasn't something that's ever taught in school and in home economics or whatever, you know. So it's pretty huge.
Yeah, it's another reminder too that this was a time before you could just go to any shop or any friend and get clones. So it's an example of necessity being the mother of invention. Exactly. And, you know, I think hearkening back to Petey and some things he said to me over the years, I actually met Petey in, I think, 1999 working nonprofit raising money for the Salmon River Group. That was how I really met a lot of the Northern California people before I actually moved up here 3 years later and started connecting. But I remember him talking about similar things and saying, well, how do we know what's going to survive up here if it doesn't survive to make seeds? Yeah. And so you're really letting the area do its natural selection for you back then. It's a lot different than the breeding you're doing now, I assume.
Well, I mean, that stuff definitely, you know, every year we'll sometimes like chase some, you know, big hype trend that comes through and, you know, I think we're sometimes trendsetters too. All, you know, that's hopefully that doesn't come off sounding too egotistical, but we'll chase the hype that comes from sometimes like, you know, the cities or whatever and get there and make the genetic and run the genetic and then just be reminded really obviously by us and sometimes, you know, like just our sort of trial customer, the people that are, you know, we're R&Ding stuff with that, like, really, in some cases, you're better just, like, working on the stuff that you've worked on for years and you know, is going to treat everybody well that grows it. And just, like, how important it is to just have the basics and not necessarily be, you know, put, like, the bells and whistles in front of, like, you know, does this stuff grow really well? Does it get you stoned? And does it give you a good, you know, are you happy when you're smoking it? And all of those things that we sometimes even maybe took for granted just growing, you know, genetics that had evolved in Humboldt, sometimes just like aren't there when we bring something in and don't give it a chance to take on like a little bit of, you know, the, like what we've developed here as collectively in Humboldt County, which I feel like is a bunch of really just like strong and kind of hardy genetics that, you know, kind of, they seem to do really well, like in places where you would be concerned for the people that are growing weed there. Cause it's like, we know what the weather's like sometimes on the East Coast or in the Midwest or, you know, even in the tropics, and you're like, are they going to even be able to pull off a crop? And, you know, we get people that contact us somehow, you know, they get our genetics somehow, of course, but even in places like Maine and Jersey and New York and Pennsylvania, where it's sticky and hot and humid and rainy in the fall, and they're crushing, right? You know, they're like doing really well. And they don't, I don't think that that's always the case with all kinds of genetics.
So. I think that's so, so true. And I'm glad you pointed it out in kind of that way. It's very much like you have to have a solid foundation to build a fancy house.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what the house looks like. The foundation is going to look the same, whether you're building something glorious and fancy or something just solid. That foundation has to be right and the same. So to put those bells and whistles and finishing touches and find the super gassy phenos or the super unique, you know, expressions of the genetics you end up playing with, I think that makes the difference between, you know, strain chasing and strain making.
Right.
And, you know, I've been lucky enough to see a lot of your genetics out there in the world through the Grow Off a lot. We sponsor Sam and Jake at the Grow Off and work with them pretty extensively. So we've had the very, very fantastic benefit of getting to visit a ton of the farms that are growing these strains that you've shared with the world. And we're out there seeing them in real time as people are discovering them because it's a mystery strain.
Yeah.
And that's a really unique place to come from, to come in and start looking at a plant, not knowing what it is, and just really trying to understand. Everybody's guessing at what the genetics are, what the background is. Yeah. And it really shows a lot about what you do when you watch those strains grow from nothing to something in that mystery environment. So personally, I've been blown away by your genetics and how they've gotten through these crazy microclimates in Humboldt County and Northern California in general, which speaks to, like you're saying, them surviving in crazy environments. I came up in Michigan. It is not an easy place to grow cannabis outside. You're getting thunderstorms all summer. It's hot, it's sticky, it's humid. Yeah. So that's really cool that that's, again, it's kind of a natural selection to being a strong genetic. I think that's really cool.
I mean, a lot of the time, like when the hyped and, you know, like I said, we all have, there's hype is just, it's a real thing and it's a good thing. But, you know, sometimes it's, you can make something like that's really hyped up and it's a clone. And yeah, you can just take cuttings and pass cuttings around the whole world of that same clone. And it's just, it's so much easier if that's all that you have to do compared to coming up with something that is basically gonna have that hype quality cannabis. Every seed that you crack basically is gonna have that same, you know, whether it's a terpene or whether it's just super frosty or, and you know, maybe it's not every single seed, but I think that's like our goal. And I think we've gotten there with certain strains and it takes a lot more time. But, you know, when you can get like 100% of the seeds to actually basically really just have the, say, blueberry muffin smell or whatever, or, you know, if you can get all of them to have just an extra layer of trichomes, then that's, it's a little harder for sure than just like finding one pheno in a pheno hunt and then being able to just pass that around.
Yeah, it's harder, but it's stronger in a really cool way because, you know, people have been growing for 20, 25 years. We've all seen strains come and go and get worn out. You know, Sour Diesel, Trainwreck, all of these strains that were really endemic in Humboldt got passed around and cutting, and they got to a point where they didn't resemble themselves anymore. And that, I think, is the beauty of a stabilized seed, like you're saying, that, yeah, you can produce that blueberry muffin smell, and there might be some variety. I mean, that's genetics. Yep. But it's finding at least a little bit of stability that goes a long way.
I think it's pretty perfect that we hear a helicopter right now talking about Humboldt County growing cannabis.
We're going to have PTSD, us old school growers.
We've talked about this a lot on the program, but when we hear it, we all have a different reaction than people who have never been through that.
Yeah.
You know, Hallie, I think that's an interesting perspective to bring you in on. Like, do you remember that fear and that reality when you were young around the cannabis?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that I'll ever really get over the instinct of hearing a helicopter and wanting to go run and start putting plants under the trees, but I'm trying at least, you know. It always gives me a little startle and then I'm like, okay, wait, it's all good. Got to make sure our license is nice and posted, but that's like the one thing you got to check now. And, yep. You know, if they don't see it, then they're just wasting their time. But, you know, it's still, it is honestly stressful to see just in general because we're in a really small community and we still know a lot of our like local neighbors that do, you know, just small personal grows. Maybe they grow a little bit extra, but really it's like not like they're going crazy. It's not like they're, you know, destroying the property around them or grading the land in a major way. They're really like trying to do their best to live symbiotically with their property. And, you know, they still get busted. And it's, you know, it's one of the major downsides of this whole legalization thing. It's sad to see your neighbors get, you know, their property auctioned off because they, you know, grew 20 too many freaking plants.
It's like the newspaper headline is like, camp takes out, you know, unlicensed farm, picks up, you know, a little bit of garbage or whatever. And like the real story is like, camp takes out local volunteer fire and rescue chief and like, right. You know, like ruins the, you know, volunteer school teacher position and blah, blah, blah. So,
Yeah, and it's another example of how the powers that be posed it as cannabis breaking apart families and destroying families. And yeah. I think this moment is another great opportunity to talk on how cannabis brings families together. And I, as Rick said, I think it's super amazing that you have this father-daughter duo. Mm-hmm. You're among the first people I know. Like, I've seen cannabis pass from generation to generation. Of course, my father smoked and taught me a little bit about it. It's how I learned. But to see you coming together and working together in a professional atmosphere and gaining the respect of the cannabis community globally for what you're both doing and bringing to the table, that to me is a success story for cannabis. And I'm interested in the challenges that it brings and also in the joy that it brings, both of you working together. I mean, I have daughters. I can't imagine, they're still a little younger, but I can't imagine now working with them in 10, 15 years in a professional atmosphere. I think it's super amazing. Tell us a little bit about the struggles and the joys that that brings y'all.
I mean, overall, I feel like really fortunate to be where we're at. I got kind of lucky because, like, right as things are really ramping up, like, you know, we used to tell our neighbors to come by and bring a six pack of beer and we, you know, count out their seeds right there and that was it. But now it's like, as soon as you hit legal, it's, you know, like boom, 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 licenses, metric, and, you know, it got really intense. And right around then was when I was legally allowed to be a part of things. It was just turning 21. And so I was like ready to fully dive on it. And I mean, I started begging him to let me trim when I was like 12 years old. I'm not going to lie. I always really wanted to get involved as much as I could. And so I feel lucky that, you know, it came at the right time for me. And, you know, maybe not the perfect time for you, because I know it's been a lot and overwhelming, but it was going to happen sooner or later, and I'm stoked that we've made it work so far.
Like Hallie mentioned earlier, she did try to convince me to get an Instagram for like a good 2 years, and I think we got it in like 2015 or 16 or something like
that. You didn't get it until 2017. We are late to the party.
All right, maybe 2017.
But I mean,
but there's good things, there's good perspective that, you know, like she brings to the table without a doubt. And it's not just Instagram, it's like, you know, lots of other things. And I think it's definitely, there's some contrast that, you know, I think I'm like 43. I don't even really remember these days, but you know, she was born when I was 20, or you know, I think I was 19, 20 in there. And, you know, her mom still, you know, comes and helps out with work and stuff. So we're, you know, even though we didn't exactly pull off the whole nuclear family thing, we have stayed, you know,
still always a family business.
It's his family. Yeah. And so yeah, you know, I mean, I really look forward to what I think what Hallie can add to the, I always lament saying industry, but you know, what she'll bring to the table as time passes. You know, I think that I learn from her, and I think she still learns from me a lot too. But
I agree.
You know, she was on like literally riding on a backpack, you know, one of those little baby backpacks to like go to a gorilla patch back in 1999.
When he said by 1.5, I was really good at ducking bushes.
She was good at ducking bushes. Because, you know, they'd flap back and smack her in the face. It's terrible. But, like, that was just, like, I, you know, I'm sure my parents would, like, cringe. But
I respect you endlessly for it, to be honest. And just to see, like, the progression from then to now. I mean, we were living in, like, a one-room cabin. And he had to install his own hot water heater so he could wash my cloth diapers. And, you know, now you finally have a washer and dryer, and, you know, I'm really proud, honestly. We've come very far.
Things change, you know. Now I'm like, oh, Hallie, go get your, you know, like we were questioning vaccines back then because, you know, we were up in the woods and stuff, and now she's like, I don't know about this, and I'm like, just get the vaccine, come on. It's so funny how things change.
Yeah, the one vaccine
we don't have strong opinions
get,
about it. Let's not talk about that.
But change the subject. One time at Black Bear, I did step on a rusty nail, and he had to take me all the way to the coast to go get my tetanus shot.
That's right. I did. It was like at one of the reunion parties or whatever. I think she was like 6 or 7 or something.
We were up at the gatehouse.
Oh, no way, really?
And then remember when I had to unscrew that
screw out of my
screw
foot?
Out of your toe?
Yeah, that was
That was
fun.
Terrible.
Wow.
Yeah,
well, brutal. She was just like a charger. She would literally, you know, just everything you told her not to do, she would do. And so, like, when I heard you talking about kids and how you couldn't imagine them working with you and all that stuff, like, especially, I think, girls, I mean, I don't know because I haven't raised a teenage boy yet, but teenage girls, just there's so much of an evolution that happens between 13 and 18. It's like huge changes.
Yeah, it must have been a little
bit
training.
Like,
Mike's shaking in his chair right now.
I always tell
my daughter, my oldest is 12, so I am literally quaking.
Buckle up.
Thanks for the warning.
I'm just going to have to smoke a lot of weed for like the next 6 to 8 years, and then things will go back to normal.
Well, you better get a head start on that one.
I'm ready. Maybe I'm ready for that.
No, that's terrible. But anyway, it's been great, and I'm really happy that Hallie is able to, you know, be doing this. And yeah, it's funny because for a while with Prop 215, it was like with our, you know, first iteration of medical cannabis, there was, you know, it was legal and everything like that. I think you didn't wait very long to get your prescription, right? Your recommendation, let's say, right?
No.
Yeah. She was like, you know, 18 in a day when she was at the doctor's getting it because you could, you know?
Yeah.
And then they came up with this new Prop 64 and they made it 21. So it was kind of like for a little while, she couldn't participate. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was like she went from being able to, to being, you know, all of a sudden she's 18 and a half, 19 or whatever. And now it was taboo again. Isn't that funny?
That's that's backwards. And I hadn't really ever thought about that. Yeah.
She was in this like little window of having, it was really frustrating because like, say the Emerald Cup or something like that, where, you know, they're really checking everybody very carefully to make sure that they're 21. There was 1 year where she was not able to participate in as much of a...
Right.
But anyway...
That's tough.
He had to hide me in a box of seeds. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
That's also interesting because... Looking at it from my perspective, I went through those ages in that time period in Michigan, and it was, you know, clearly outlawed. And I ended up having to bail from Michigan to come to California because 215 had happened. And I was like, I can at least have weed and not go to jail. This is what I need to do after being hauled into jail for having a roach and things like that in the Midwest. And I never really thought about that implication of the switch from 215 to 64.
There was a little window, yeah. I've never thought about that either. That's
you're crazy. A very unique slice of the demographic. That's an interesting perspective.
It was definitely a tricky spot to be in. I remember, like, we would, you know, have, like, dispensary events or all sorts of stuff. Yeah. And I was, like, you know, it was, like, for 6 months at least that I was, like, cool, sit this out.
Yeah, you got the carpet pulled out from underneath.
Yeah, but, you know, it was worth waiting for. And, like, to be honest, I mean, I'm not even that much of a drinker. And COVID happened when I turned 21, so I had to have something to look forward to. I was like, woo, I can go to work legally.
Looking at the people... being exposed to your genetics, you know, I travel around for Royal Gold for work all the time for cannabis trade shows and expos, and I hear people talking about your genetics. I see them all over the country, and you're changing the way people understand cannabis and respect the plant based on the work you've done. And I think that's a really interesting perspective. And, you know, you said something earlier that's, you know, said you hoped it didn't sound egotistical. Well, it doesn't at all. I hope people in your shoes recognize what you're doing to change the perception of people growing up in places that don't have access. It's really a huge thing. You know, we talked about it randomly on another episode of Royal Grown Radio about how Blueberry Muffin is kind of making it out into the world now. Like, we were lucky enough to be exposed in the first couple seasons of it getting out up here, and that's an amazing genetic. What sort of old school genetics or new school genetics are inspiring you now, and do you see a difference? I hear people talking about new school and old school genetics, like the Landrace strains and, you know, some of those not as glossy, not as flashy genetics that really built the foundation that we were talking about earlier for these amazing new phenos to come out of. And now you see these new genetics like the cookies and the ice cream cakes and the wedding cakes and the muffin that really are a little different. Like, what's some of the old school influence and what do you see coming out of new school genetics?
New genetics that I'm really excited about. I mean, Landrace stuff, we played a lot with Landraces over the last 5 years. And one of the tough things sometimes for us, because we really, really try to have both like a hobbyist kind of backyard catalog where it's like everything. You know, if you want to, if you remember smoking Trainwreck when you first moved out here, which I know all of us do.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's, you know, an Arcata origin strain. And you want to smoke that terp again this summer or what, this fall. Want to grow a little bit in your backyard. We've got it in our catalog, and you can totally do that. Would I recommend that a big commercial grower buy up, like, a ton of Trainwreck seeds and bet their season on it? Probably not, because, you know, it just doesn't seem to fit some of the more commercial kind of, you know, qualities that people look for. So we have these things that are in there that are like, definitely are like old school and unique. And I mean, that's like almost like an Humboldt Arcata Landrace. You know, it's been here a long time. I mean, 25, 30 years, maybe longer, 40 years. So there's that. And when we play with Landrace stuff, no matter what though, somebody is gonna get something out of the catalog that we might have really bred more for people that are like terp hunters, you know, that are really just looking for that one unique terpen that they loved from their youth or that just makes them, you know, get high the way they really enjoy or whatever. And I think when we did the Landrace, when we did like the Blue Nile Landrace, it was like we kind of had it out there. We didn't actually put it in the catalog, but we had it at the Emerald Cup. And people gravitated towards it a lot because Landrace is kind of a little bit of a buzzword right now. And big so, time. Or it has been, I guess, over the last 2 years. And people were like, oh, you got a Landrace. And we were like, yes, but be careful. But people hardly ever heed your words. And you know, literally this fucking strain finishes up in like November or December. And
oh, no.
I think we harvested it sometime after
Thanksgiving. Different than like anything else. You know, it's like, and we had people that were just like, oh man, you know, like I grew that Blue Nile and it just didn't work out very well. You know, it like finished in December and we were like, that's what we said on the thing, you know. So
yeah,
you have to be a little, like we tend to be on the cautious side. Like if we're going to put it out there, we want people to get good smokable herb out of it. And you have to be like really, really dedicated to having something that's just incredibly unique and different to experiment too much with those Landrace-y, some of them. I mean, some of the other ones are not so much like that. I do just miss plain old kind of happy weed that doesn't, you know, these days it sort of seems like it's like this terpen, or I mean THC war that's going on where it's like, you know, you've got different genetics and genetics have something to do with it without a doubt. Like, you know, and you saw with the grow off, like you can have a genetic that commonly tests in the high 20s, 30s or whatever. And no matter what, a farm is going to end up getting 15% and a farm is going to end up getting 34% every single year. I mean, it's been like that like for 3-4 years. We've had all the way from 15 to 30%. And then, of course, you throw the labs in, too. There's tons of labs in California. And right now, like the kind of labs that have been around a long time are like less tempted to pad the results. Whereas some of the brand new labs that are trying to get customers, like, you can pretty much tell that everything that they, so I just think it's just like, God, you got to take the THC with a grain of salt. But, you know,
what was that lab result we saw the other day, that it was like, when the person added it all up, it was actually like a few percent over 100%,
102% or something.
Yeah, that's that new school lab.
Yeah, they'll just give you a few extra points. Just
but
cause.
You know, it's like, it's too bad because, you know, back in the day, of course, it was just like, you know, we talked about mostly how good it smelled and, you know, how good it was to smoke. And it was just like, usually it was just like, oh man, did you try that stuff that so-and-so brought to that, you know, jam session or whatever we were doing, you know, that work party. And we'd try to get those seeds or, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we weren't testing back then either, but if we were, they probably would have been between like 10 and 18, 19%, you know, tops.
Yeah.
I mean, and the, honestly, on the high teens, low twos is actually like my happy place.
Yeah.
When, you know, usually when someone's like, oh yeah, this is 27, I'm usually like, cool, I got shit to do. I'm just going to keep moving.
I know. And you'd think that you could just smoke a little less and that 27, 30% weed would not like...
Doesn't work that way.
...affect you that way, but... It's really, I think it really, really has a lot more to do with terpenes anyway, you know, because like, why is it that I can take one hit of certain kinds of weed and, you know, say, I still get paranoid sometimes. Like I'm not even afraid to admit that. Like I'm smoked a lot of fucking weed in my day and still sometimes have my little moments, you know, where I'll be like, oh my God,
it's a lot better.
Gotta go
now,
clean
though.
My truck, yeah. You know, like whatever. But
he used to like randomly, we'd only go into town every so often, but we'd go into town and be doing grocery runs and whatnot. And, you know, all of a sudden he'd just switch routes and start going like the opposite direction and be like, what are you doing? He's like, I don't know. I thought that guy maybe was a cop. Maybe he was following us. We're good. Let's keep going.
Well, that's a really good point because it comes out of that pre-legalization exposure. Like, we came from a place where that was a realistic worry, where people got followed home from grow stores, even here in Northern California.
Right.
You know, they would get followed home from a grow store and get busted 2 weeks later. And so you're just looking out for the greater good. And
Well, I mean, we still get people that'll, like, you know, text us or message us on Signal to ask about their metric transfer. And we're like, you know, like, I know we're trying to keep this on the DL, but you realize this, like, we're feeding all this information directly to the state right now, you know, like,
right. Yeah,
literally we're like this, the state is plugged in to our
that's awesome.
Invoicing system that we're using with you. So you can use Signal if you want to. Just remember that, you know,
you can hide it all you want until you report it to the state, but you're going to report it to the state. So what's the point?
Well, I look at it now. I'm like, the state straight up mandates that I grow weed because they're going to charge me for this licensed period that I have, you know, applied for. Right. So I've said, am I allowed to grow cannabis? And they've said, okay, you've done, you know, you've made like 4 copies of War and Peace worth of fucking red tape. All right, yes, you're allowed to grow cannabis now. and then, you know, literally, like, my permit is, you know, a foot tall worth of papers. And anyway, then they say, all right, here's your bill. You go pay it. And they're totally 100%, like, you're gonna grow it, right? You're gonna grow all this weed, and if you don't, they're gonna have a problem in a way, because they're gonna be like, well, what the fuck, like, why didn't you grow, you know, however many square feet worth of cannabis we expected you to, you know, where's our cut, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And I personally think that's a failure of the system right now, and I hope that eventually that changes, because it really does forces you to pay for something you may or may not even want to do. You may want to go small. You may have a family emergency. You may have you know, COVID happening and need to reapproach how you bring your employees to your place of business and need to reduce your square footage, but you don't want to give away your ability to do that the next year, which requires you then to pay like you used it. And I feel that's a failure of the system to acknowledge the reality of farming because it's cannabis. And in no other farming industry and no other cultivation of any other plant are you held to that standard. And that's, to me, it's like I said, it's a huge failure of the system.
Yeah.
I agree.
But, you know, we're not taking any years off anytime soon. don't worry, anybody. we got to make the seeds every year. It's been crazy. The last month has been nuts. And like every single year from, you know, I remember like our seeds, we'd sell them to HPRC here in Arcata was one of our biggest, earliest accounts for, you know, doing Humboldt Seed Company, like packaged fancy. And like Hallie mentioned, it did start with people being like, hey, you know, we heard you're into seeds. You have seeds, right? And I'd be like, yeah, come on and get them. I have tons. And they'd be like, can I pay you? And I'd be like, no, just bring a sixer and we'll hang out and we'll get your seeds out. And I'd basically like make them pick it, you know, help me get them out and stuff. And that was the swap. But, you know, I've said this on a million podcasts, but it was basically like, I think my sweetie at the time was just, I'm fucking sick of having all your bros up in the middle of winter. And, you know, how many six packs do you need? And like, when are you going to start charging money for this? And so then I went down to the courthouse and, you know, I think that was crazy of me in retrospect, because it was another 10 years or so before any other Humboldt branded companies really started opening up, like before Humboldt Farm, Humboldt, you know, Humboldt Grow This, Grow That. But I always just figured like, hey, you know, I just went, I'm Humboldt Seed Company is what I told them. And they looked at me funny. I know they'd know what was up, but they couldn't say anything. Cause I also was like, yeah, you know, we're doing seeds of all kinds, you know, making sunflower seeds too. And you know, whatever. And I've been into that kind of stuff as well. You know, we do sometimes we save a lot of different seeds, but 99.999% it's about cannabis. So
he's bred his own squash strains too, though.
So. I made some squash. Nice. Yeah.
I'm gonna have to get some of those from
you. Playing around with peppers. It was mostly just like playing with like kids and stuff. But I guess my point was that, like, HPRC was great. It was Patrick. You guys might know. Remember Patrick, who did, like, he was kind of the buyer there for a while. And he'd just motivate me. He'd be like, all right, you need to like step up the packaging game. He'd just do all kinds of stuff like that. And I really appreciated that in a way. He'd be like, you know, when are you going to come out with your new catalog, and just kind of keep me on point. And that was back in like,
when early. Nobody was doing it.
Nobody was doing right. It at all. Nice like push. Nobody at all. And he was just like, you got to do this, man, do this. And it was good. Cause, you know, this Humboldt was a cradle for shit like that. You know, like all these really early, early innovative companies that came out of this place, you know, it was just our community that kind of lifted each other up in that way. And, you know, like Royal Gold and, you know, everybody from like, even you think about some of the early edibles companies like Space Jam and folks like that. And
sure.
Just like all these really OG people that innovated a lot of different things, you know?
Yeah, it seems like it was a really unique natural selection process of people falling into what they felt passionate about within the industry here, as we all kind of discovered it, and the industry was really born in California and then exploded across the country. The last 10 years have just been so crazy to watch what's happened in places like Michigan, where I'm from. I left and 4 years later it was legal, and now there's cannabis everywhere and people are doing the same things and you're watching businesses form and natural selection. But it really was under kind of a unique magnifying glass here in Humboldt, where we all kind of knew each other from shows, and you saw, yeah, you gravitated towards seeds and really just naturally owned the game because you kept taking steps to improve. And, you know, the guys at Humboldt County's Own and, you know, some of those other businesses around here that were old schoolers from up in the hills that just were like, well, I made fertilizer for myself and then my neighbor wanted some.
Right. Yep.
So I made enough for my neighbor, and then there was a little left over, so his neighbor got some too. And next thing you know, they were all asking me for their whole season's worth. And
yeah. Well, it's like, and I know that you guys hear this all over the place. It's like, if it's good enough for the growers of Humboldt, then it's definitely going to be good enough everywhere. And I mean, there's a lot of truth to that, you know, like,
no doubt,
you know, we're like, having a soil company in Humboldt is kind of like running the gauntlet, like really fast and hard, because people are going to let you know if, you know, you have the recipe wrong, and you're going to quickly refine that shit and figure it out, because, you know, there's no other place where you have so many people that can identify what's the problem, you know, and identify, like, you know, and they're not afraid to let you know, you know?
Yeah.
So like, that was, I think that's something that I feel like, you know, kind of does, you know, and I don't want to just talk Humboldt this, Humboldt that. I mean, the whole Emerald Triangle is like that, you know. I think there's a lot of love for Mendo and Trinity and just like the whole place. Like,
we know that when Humboldt is mentioned, there's always that, you know, extra, you know, connotation that we're talking about the Emerald Triangle. Because yeah. You are right. Trinity and Mendo, they've been in the game just as long. You know, Humboldt.
Lake, even, you know.
Yeah, Humboldt Sonoma. Got that name nationwide, you know, for a few different reasons. But, yeah, I mean, all the collective work between these three counties and even beyond, you know, even if you go down to Sonoma or Lake yeah. County, there's been, this area has been concentrated on perfecting the art of growing cannabis. And you're right. Like, if you do it wrong, you're not only going to be told what you're doing wrong and how maybe to correct it, but they're also going to let you know that, hey, man, like, you know, you need to correct this before you attach the Humboldt name to it or the Emerald Triangle name
too.
To it.
Yeah.
And that's important, too.
Yeah.
I agree. And much like you said, you know, yeah, we say that all the time. Like, yeah, we're lucky enough to develop this brand and these products in the most scrutinizing grow climate in the world. People
right.
are,
exactly.
If you're killing people's plants, you're done here. This is not going to yeah. last. And we've had the tenacity to make it right and get through that. And I think it's much the same way that your name has emerged as a leader in the seed industry, because the genetics play among the most scrutinizing individuals in the world in Humboldt County and Trinity County and the Emerald Triangle at large. Like you said, those are the people who started out getting your seeds and kept coming back. And that's where the word spreads via neighbor to neighbor to neighbor to, oh, I'm on a phone call to my buddy in Colorado now that Colorado's gone. Oh, you got to get some of those seeds from Humboldt Seed. And I think that we're in a very unique place. And that's why you're right. We do overuse Humboldt, but it's where we are, so it's an easy reference.
Yep.
But Northern California and Southern Oregon really have changed the face of planetary cannabis through a community effort, and I think that's a really cool thing to celebrate and work together as individuals and a community to continue to elevate.
I mean, this is basically where Sensimilla came from, like the having weed without seeds. And I think that in part, just having that, and I've been trying to figure out exactly like who can be credited for really figuring that out. But I know that this area was really the place where it came from initially. And back then it was like, you know, you didn't take credit for shit like that either. You were never going to take credit for anything or write hardly anything down. I mean, there's only like a few like true OGs, like good old Ed Rosenthal and Jack Herer and people like that that would actually put their name on like a book, sure. You know, how to grow Sensimilla. But, you know, back in like the, literally in the 60s, weed had seeds for 99%. And 70s is when it kind of, they started figuring out like, we can take this one odd looking plant away out of the picture and all of a sudden it's so much better and there's no seeds. And
yep,
that is, you know, Sensimilla means without seed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's a big part of,
it's like, a part of the cannabis mystery of Northern California. It's almost like the light depth thing, you know.
I mean,
it,
right,
it made, you know, popularity in cannabis growers in the early 2000s for the most part, but it's been rumored for years that there were growers in Southern Humboldt doing that through the 80s and 90s.
Right.
You know, they would pack it up by the end of June and be done with it. Once those helicopters started to fly in the 90s, they were like, nah, we got this figured out. There's always a way, you know. So that's, we always say that all the time, that cannabis growers, especially in this area during that peak era of the war on drugs,
yep,
that, you know, the tenacity, man, holy shit.
Yeah.
I mean,
creativity.
Growing in blackberry bushes or perched up in the treetops. And I mean, there's all kinds of shit that, you know, was happening in these hills to yep, skate around it and get it done, you know.
Some innovative people out here.
No doubt.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground here. There's a few other things I'd like to touch on, but I feel like we always take a break, take a few minutes, usually get ourselves right, sample some wares and share a moment. And when we come back, I want to ask a couple questions about what's to come for Humboldt Seed Company kind of after COVID. I've got some questions about autoflower and feminized. Those are big things changing the face of cannabis cultivation. And we'll come back in just a few minutes and check back in with Rural Grown Radio, Nat and Hallie of Humboldt Seed Company, and we'll see y'all in a few.
Awesome. Hey folks, this is Nat Pennington from Humboldt Seed Company.
And I'm Hallie Pennington, and we're on Royal Grown Radio.
You can check us out at HumboldtSeeds.com or...
or at our Instagram at The Humboldt Seed Company.
All right.
Tune in next week for part two of the family business on Royal Grown Radio.